If you like audiobooks or audio shows, check out a free trial of Audible. Just click the link in the description.
Welcome to Mind Shock. This is Bruce McGuire.
And Maxwell Powers.
And today, we are not just gonna go over ghost encounters. We are gonna go over the creepiest ghost hunter encounters with ghosts. So, obviously, everyday people have their encounters. Most people say that they are figments of their imagination or just people being spooked and mistaking things. However, what about professional ghost hunters, paranormal experts, or ghost busters? What about their creepiest, scariest, spookiest encounters? Maxwell, grab your nightlight and your teddy bear. This is going to be a very, very terrifying podcast. As always, if you like the podcast, you can donate to our PayPal. Just check a link in the description. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. Hit the bell for notifications. If you like the podcast, hit the like button. Feel free to share it across social media platforms. Like our Facebook page and also check us out. Reddit, Twitter, Patreon. So Maxwell, what is your opinion of ghost hunters? People who professionally hunt ghosts. Researchers who document hauntings and paranormal evidence of these hauntings.
I'm guessing their primary motivation was personal experience, probably like 95% of them. And they're just intrigued by the whole thing and they want to solve the mystery, I guess.
Yeah, have you seen any of those ghost shows like on Sci-Fi or Travel Channels? There's quite a lot of ghost shows.
Yes, I've come across a few of them. They're pretty interesting. You know, they go out there with audio recording equipment, video equipment, and some, yeah.
What'd you think? Did any of the encounters seem legit, or does it mostly seem like it's just embellished, whereas maybe there was a creepy noise, but then they overreact on purpose for the show, or maybe there was some kind of legitimate paranormal or supernatural activity, but they kind of blow it up to make it seem so much greater than it was for the viewing audience?
Yeah, unfortunately how TV works, they tend to, they're under a lot of pressure to produce content that get views and attention. So they tend to do things that that get them those things to keep their jobs. So,
you know what's funny? I think there might be some staging going on as well, whereas maybe producers or part of the crew might set up a different part of the crew with kind of ghost scares or like strings on a chair or maybe things like that where they can fake incidents, but the reactions will be real because they're not going to let everybody know about it. Do you think stuff like that goes on?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
If I were a ghost show producer who was only interested in ratings and money, I'd pull some stuff like that. But that makes the show worse because if there are legitimate incidents, then they're overshadowed by all the fakery and embellishment. So that's kind of a shame where there needs to be, I guess there should be a differentiation between shows that are like 100% legit and then entertainment type shows. Because every now and then there will be documentaries or podcasts where it seems like the researchers are dead serious and they even document, you know, and some of their documented video evidence, there really is nothing going on. And they might say, oh, I felt the chill or this meter said this, even though I don't see anything. So I'm not sure if that was a ghost or if that's just nothing. See, that seems a little bit more legitimate. I don't know. But of course, it's more boring. So anyway, let's get into encounters that paranormal experts and ghost hunters have had themselves. So some of these were not on the job, which is pretty interesting. So I have compiled the greatest compendium of encounters by ghost hunters. For the first one, we will go to The Huffington Post. This is an article posted in 2014 by John D. Mims, author of The Tesla Gate. Anyone who has done paranormal research knows that investigations are typically hours of boredom intermingled with a few minutes of excitement. Most of the excitement is due to prosaic reasons, a breeze or creaky floorboards, but some of the time it is not. Those unusual incidents are the ones that keep investigators going. I have experienced some incredible things on investigations and have been with others who have. When it happens, it definitely changes your perspective on life in a hurry. My new science fiction novel, The Tesla Gate, deals with what might happen if ghosts were suddenly among us in huge numbers. And I had no shortage of creepy experiences to draw on. These are the scariest moments of my career. Number one, a father's voice. Of my personal experiences, I will save the best for last. I will start with EVPs, which are electronic voice phenomenons. You familiar with that, Maxwell? That's probably like a staple of the ghost hunting enterprise.
I'm not familiar with the technicalities, but I know that they carry around audio equipment.
These are recordings that collect ambient noise in the room during an investigation, or they can be interactive. The investigators will ask questions to an alleged entity. Usually, nothing out of the ordinary is sensed by those present during the recording session. But when the recording is played back and analyzed, well, it can make your hair stand on end. I have recorded several incredible examples over the years, but there are three that really stick out. First, we did an investigation at a home where an old man had died of lung cancer just months earlier. The house still reeked of cigarettes and death. One of the investigators asked if he was mad and wanted us to leave. The response was picked up on the recording was a very angry and raspy yes. The homeowner, who was the deceased man's daughter, broke down in tears when she heard the recording and identified it as her father's voice. So, what do you think of that one, Maxwell?
That's kind of messed up.
I mean, if there's multiple witnesses and nobody's faking if they, unless they smuggled some guy in there with a raspy voice to yell out yes when they did the reading or when they were doing the EVP. I mean, I guess that's possible. It's kind of weird though, with all these black and white fallacies, it's like if some of them are faked, then some people think they're all faked. So that's obviously logically fallacious. Not that it's, yeah, it's weird. No further thoughts on that one, Maxwell? Because the daughter's there with them. She broke down in tears. Huh.
I don't know. Sometimes it could have been, or it could have been that she's in a in an environment where she's vulnerable to be looking for that kind of thing, like her father's voice.
Two, the jovial ghost. In 2010, we investigated a 120-year-old home that now houses a museum. The original owner of the home died in the 1930s. He was well known in the community and famous for his jovial and boisterous laughter. During an EVP session, someone asked if he liked to laugh. On the recording, we picked up a loud belly laugh from a man. I was the only male present in the house at the time. What do you think about that one?
I'm the only what at the time?
Male. So apparently there were only women with him when they were doing this EVP session. So this is the ghost hunter. He's there doing the session, and he's. So one of the other people asked, so it wasn't him. So this is John D. Mims. He's doing an EVP session with other females.
Yeah,
What?
I get it. I get it. Go on.
Yeah, one of the females asked him. Asked the ghost if he liked to laugh, and there was a loud belly laugh from a man. And Mims was the only one who was the only male there.
That's cool.
What do you think?
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know what gets me? It's like there's multiple people around, It's like, are they all hallucinating? Are they all in on faking it? It's like, what's the justification for the people who think this is all fake 100% of the time, under no circumstances or anything real in ghost hunting? So they would have to all be in on it, right? Or someone hid in the house somehow, or they had some kind of device. I don't know. Like, what do you think? Did they fake it, or is it real?
I don't know.
Is that all you got?
Well, there's women, there's dude, there's a belly laugh, and I don't know what else to say.
What do you think about it? Legitimate ghost or not?
No ghost?
Not a ghost? So what was it?
Not a ghost.
It was not a ghost?
Not a ghost.
So who was it laughing on the
I have no
recording?
idea. I have no idea. Someone just walked in trying to pull a prank or something.
But if there wasn't anybody there.
Yeah, but how do we know that?
We don't. I'm saying if there was nobody there. Yeah, if someone snuck it, well, it was on the recording. So during the recording, they didn't hear it. So you're saying someone just happened to laugh at that time because wouldn't they have heard it if they were all in the room and someone was really there? So that means someone would have either edited the recording after the fact without telling them. So that's your theory.
Oh wait, so I'm misunderstanding this.
So EVPs, so most of the time, EVPs, you cannot hear the ghost's response with your own ears. When you listen to the recording after the fact, you can boost the audio, whatever. After the fact is usually when things are picked up or responses, moans, things that were not necessarily heard in the room during the ghost hunt.
They would just have to play the audio right away, right live, almost live TV to get some credence.
Yeah. Okay. Number three, still singing. Probably the most incredible EVP recording I've heard occurred at a tuberculosis sanitarium. Wow, that sounds creepy. There is a particular hallway where people have had experiences with a little girl. Hospital records from the abandoned sanitarium are sketchy at best, but it is believed that a little girl and her mother died there sometime in the 1940s. We had just finished an EVP session and were packing our equipment to move on to another section. I left my recorder running on a wooden platform as we packed away cameras and other equipment. When I went back and listened to my recorder the next day, my jaw practically dropped to the floor. As we were quietly talking amongst ourselves about the equipment, a little girl can clearly be heard singing, the volume going up and down as if she were moving around. Finally, just a few seconds before I shut down my recording to move on, she can be heard a short distance down the hall in a sing-song voice saying, "I'm down in this room." What do you think? That's pretty weird.
Yeah, I missed the last part.
What part did you get up to?
They played the audio. She started laughing, and then I forgot the rest.
Laughing, that was the previous case.
Oh, was this a new case?
This is another EVP recording at a tuberculosis sanitarium. I've
Oh
been
yeah. It's kind of weird.
What did you get up to on this one?
The tuberculosis.
That's all you got? So
That's all I got.
you completely blacked out for the rest of it? So
Yeah.
they finished an EVP session. They were packing up equipment. So he left the recorder running while they were packing up the equipment. The next day, he's listening to the EVP recording, and a little girl can clearly be heard singing, the volume going up and down as if she were moving around. Finally, just a few seconds before I shut down my recorder to move on, she can be heard a short distance down the hall in a sing-song voice saying, "I'm down in this room."
That's kind of creepy as hell.
Yeah, so she's just walking around singing, and then she's telling them where she is, as if she wants them to come visit her or what? I don't know. That's unsettling to say the least. So what do you think? You think all these guys are lying about these recordings and they just fake them?
I don't know. They're probably all real, and they're freaking some weird fucking entities are singing and shit.
I don't know if I'd go. I would say at least a certain percentage of them have to be fake. I've heard a bunch of them, and it's really hard to make things out. So it's, I'm not saying it's tough because in some of them you can hear that it's clearly a voice. In other ones, it sounds like it could just be wind bouncing off of walls or some kind of air moving through ducts or just bizarre things like that. Except in cases where there's no wind at all on a deadly still night. I mean, there's exceptions where you're like, okay, well, that's weird. That can't happen. So there's definitely anomalies. But yeah, I don't know. If I had to put a percentage, I mean, even saying 1% of the EVP recordings out of all the thousands of recordings, if not tens of thousands are out there, are legit, that's still a lot. Even 0.1% is, I mean, that would be a bit. That would be a bit. Okay, number four, come join us. While EVP recordings are fascinating and probably the best evidence collected for paranormal phenomenon, they do not compare to personal experiences. Very rarely does anyone ever see anything, but hearing and feeling are both every bit as, if not more, terrifying. I have heard plenty with my naked ear, and I think all of those incidents occurred at the tuberculosis sanatorium. The building is 6 stories high, including the basement, and longer than a football field. At the end of one investigation, I and another investigator went to the upper stories to collect our stationary night vision cameras. Everyone remained on the first floor, packing away other equipment. When we reached the fifth floor, we made our way to where the cameras were, and just before we got there, we both froze. There was suddenly a conversation going on around us, as if we were surrounded by people, but we were the only ones on the floor. Even though we couldn't make out what they were saying, we definitely heard human voices. What do you think about that?
That's creepy as hell.
Can you imagine? You're just walking around collecting cameras, and then all of a sudden there's just a whole bunch of voices around you, as if there's people walking and talking around you. That's bizarre. I've actually never heard of one. I've never heard of an encounter quite like that one, because that's almost even creepier than just one voice, right?
Yeah, that's like,
Because it's almost like you're surrounded. That must be really, really creepy.
yeah.
Any other comments, Maxwell?
Well, I'm thinking about how creepy that thing is, and it's like kind of I don't want to experience that.
Yeah, it's very, very unsettling.
I like my silence. I like hearing the fucking birds and shit.
Well, a lot of times in paranormal situations, all of the bird and animal noise completely stops and it's dead silent, as if they know that there's something weird around and they want no part of it.
That's messed up.
Well, you know about that, right? That's like in every single horror movie. And most.
I actually don't. Like, I didn't know that.
It's kind of like, it's almost cliche where, the birds stop, the all animal noise ceases, and there's just nothingness. I mean, that's in horror novels, horror movies. It's quite common.
Well, I've seen that. I've seen. I think you're right, but I haven't. I don't know. Maybe it happens so much that I don't notice it. I don't know.
All right, number five, all alone. On one trip to the tuberculosis sanatorium, I stayed with the equipment on the first floor while everyone went upstairs to inspect the building. About 10 minutes after they left, I heard the most miserable and terrifying moaning I had ever heard in my life coming from the hall. It sounded like a woman in severe pain. I quickly checked the hallway, and of course, no one was there. But that was not the first time I had heard the woman's cries of agony. I had heard her on a previous investigation, but that had been a brief experience while several other people were in the building. The second time left no doubt about what I heard. The room used to have the ghastly purpose of performing experiments on tuberculosis patients. Yeah, some of those old historical accounts of hospitals, especially mental hospitals, where they do experiments on people, because I guess if they think they're crazy or if they have some kind of disease like tuberculosis, that somehow it's okay to do experiments on them, that's really messed up. Some dark history. Dark, dark history.
That's actually kind of cliche too in the horror films
Yeah,
where they experiment with people and they're all tortured and traumatized and
That's a lot of negative energy. Would you be going back to this tuberculosis sanatorium? If all these things are happening, why would you go there? I mean, I guess if you're a ghost hunter, that's your thing. But would you want to go there?
now just I'd stay in I'd stay in somewhere else.
I mean, I guess you could make the argument for going once just to kind of get the experience. But if there's all this creepy stuff going on, I don't know. Would you keep coming back? It's kind of weird. Kind of weird. Number six, go away. There have been times when we've actually had to halt investigations for safety reasons. I kid you not. I was at an investigation in October of 2009 at an old bed and breakfast in Hot Springs, and one of the women in our group suddenly got unexplained scratch marks on her back. Five perfect lines appeared like they had been cut from five sharp fingernails on an invisible hand. We helped her dress the wound and then immediately left. And I'm not sure if you know this, Maxwell, but this is quite common in ghost hunting. There'll be scratches or bruises or red marks or indents on people where a ghost attacked. Now, this is quite bizarre because depending on which theory of ghosts within the paranormal and the occult you believe in, there are some theories that ghosts cannot actually physically touch you or harm you. But yet, experiences like these, they keep coming up. Cases where ghosts have actually left marks on people.
That's pretty crazy.
You've never heard of that before?
No, but I think I've seen it in a couple of films.
So what do you think? I mean, we're talking ghost hunters getting spooked, just getting really, really spooked and then just leaving the location immediately. I mean, it's kind of weird. I mean, if that was an open bed and breakfast that just continues doing business, it's weird. Do you want to go check that bed and breakfast out, Maxwell? We'll do a live podcast from the bed and breakfast.
Nah, I'm good.
You're good? You're good with your nightlight and your teddy bear at your house?
Yeah, I was thinking about, that has a cool cinematic effect, you know how in films they wake up, they think they're dreaming, and then or they wake up, they think they're dreaming, and then there's a handprint.
Yeah, very creepy. But, very creepy. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of alien abduction scenarios like that as well, where they dream they're abducted by aliens, and they wake up and they have marks on, like strange marks on them. Yeah, bizarre stuff. Number seven. Probably the most amazing thing that happened to me. I was leading a visiting TAPS, the Atlantic Paranormal Society of Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International group from Texas on an investigation in the tuberculosis sanatorium. I was grabbed by my elbow and jerked backward by something unseen. And that is no easy task considering I'm a fairly big guy. Afterward, it felt like my elbow had been submerged in ice water. When my elbow was examined by the thermal camera, it was indeed 15 degrees colder than the rest of my arm. It was a very interesting and chilling experience, no pun intended. So this one's interesting because they have their thermal cameras, very good tool. The thermal camera is showing the place where he got grabbed 15 degrees colder. How do you explain that one, Maxwell?
I don't know, but what happened at 15 degrees lower?
I just said it. He got grabbed by the arm, and it felt like his elbow had been submerged in ice water. They put the thermal camera on his arm, and it was 15 degrees colder in the spot where he got grabbed by the elbow.
Are these filmed?
I'm not sure. This is his account. I'm assuming some of them have to be on film because he has to be able to back up what he says. But these were his accounts. So if that's legitimate, how do you explain that?
I can't.
See, if it was like 5 degrees, we'd be like, well, 5 degrees, that's not much. 10 degrees is kind of a lot. 15 degrees, that's a whole lot. Like, if you put an ice cube, if you, like, put ice on your arm, it would take a little bit of time for the temperature to come down in the spot where the ice is touching. If he just got touched really briefly, he got grabbed by his elbow and jerked backward. And he says he's a very big guy. So for someone to jerk him that quickly and hard, I mean, that must have taken, what, 1 or 2 seconds? And then it took him another however many seconds to get the thermal camera on it. So it probably was even colder in the seconds between the amount of time it took him to get the thermal camera on there. 15 degrees is a lot. So if, yeah, I mean, average body temperature, 98 and change. So his arm would be 15 degrees colder. I mean, we're looking at the low 80s in temperature versus the high 90s in just the spot where he was grabbed. So it's not his whole arm. No thoughts at all, Maxwell.
Yeah, I don't know about how to explain that. I mean,
Your
I don't
thoughts don't necessarily have to be explanatory. Like, what are you thinking about the incident? That's bizarre, right? He's it's mind shocking, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how far self-hypnosis can bring you to drop parts of your body into that lower temperatures.
But it's not just that. It's being jerked almost off his feet.
I'm hoping there's video evidence of this.
Well, whether there is or there isn't, if this actually happened, we're discussing if it happened. He stated afterwards, "Was I scared from any of these instances? I can definitely say they were fascinating. There's no doubt in my mind that there are things that go bump in the night. Sometimes you set out to find them, sometimes they find you."
That's cool.
Yeah, so those were incidents from John Mims. Moving on, Reader's Digest actually had a really nice write-up by Taylor Markarian. The spookiest things ghost hunters have seen on the job. These spine-chilling stories from real-life ghost hunters will have you hiding under your covers. Strangled in a church. One of the first investigations, Greg Newkirk, a professional paranormal investigator, ever did still haunts him today. I had taken a documentary film director to an abandoned church long rumored to be haunted, he says. We'd only been in the building for half an hour before a loud knocking drew our attention to the church's 10-foot-tall pulpit. For 5 minutes, we watched a thick forest green fog manifest on the pulpit's spiral staircase before it slowly crept toward us. So what would you do, Maxwell? You're standing in a church, and then a thick green fog just suddenly manifests and starts moving towards you slowly.
I would freak out.
Would you just get out of there? Or would you stay and get footage?
I would leave the camera behind and maybe come back to it next time.
Oh, that's not a bad idea, yeah. Leave
Or
the
assign someone else, maybe someone you
So
don't.
they stood there for 5 minutes straight watching the fog manifest and slowly creep. That's when all of a sudden the director Newkirk had brought with him began to frantically gasp for air as if he were choking. Sure enough, he had two bright red handprints wrapped around his throat. They looked like burns. What do you got, Maxwell? Not only do all these people, so he's got this, actually, it's unclear whether the director has his crew with him at the time or if they're just scouting locations. So, but yeah, the director starts getting choked and there's red handprints around his throat. How do you explain that, Maxwell? Explanations, thoughts, ideas. What do you got?
I don't know. I got nothing.
Good thing you're doing a podcast on this.
I don't know how to explain it.
It's pretty shocking. It's pretty mind shocking. An otherworldly creature, John Tenney, who happens to be a friend of Newkirk's and a fellow paranormal investigator, has memories of his own that would keep even the bravest of men awake at night. Uh-oh, Maxwell, it looks like you're not getting any sleep tonight. The oddest thing I've seen happened a couple of years ago, Tenney begins. I witnessed a small hairy creature about 11 inches tall with deep inset eyes, large ears, and hooves. As the flash from my camera went off, it jumped backward into the darkness and vanished. I don't have any problem with people not believing me because I still don't know if I believe it. And I saw it. Small hairy creature, large ears and hooves. Yeah, I'd like to see his picture about of this. tripped into a coffin. It seems as though supernatural creatures are rather attracted to Tenny, host of the spooky podcast Realm of the Weird, as the hairy being with hooves wasn't the only one to interact with him. Once, while investigating an old cemetery, I heard a distinct voice say, "Careful," he shares. In my startled state, I immediately began to walk backwards. In doing so, I cracked through the lid of an old coffin and ended up falling into a grave. As I laid in the grave, I don't think I'd ever been more scared. So you think he just imagined someone saying, "Careful"?
Yeah, probably.
Probably. Would you ever, have you ever been poking around cemeteries?
Yeah.
Really? Just for fun, like in high school, or when?
No, I just walked through them. I don't know. I didn't poke them.
What do you mean you don't know? You either walked through them or you didn't. Or is your memory hazy on whether or not it was a cemetery or not?
I didn't do anything to say. I think I walked through a cemetery when I was younger.
Just for kicks? Or was it like a shortcut to where you were going?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, that's a shocker. Yeah, I've actually been to quite a few during an ill-spent youth. I wouldn't say poking around. I wouldn't say trying to instigate spirit contact. Just kind of in an exploring kind of way. Been to some creepy cemeteries. Never really saw anything. Got some weird feelings at a bunch, but nothing more than that. All right, this next one is right up your alley, Maxwell. Time-traveling ghosts.
Nice.
Believe in parallel universes? Time travel? You might, after reading this story that Tenny recounts. In the early 2000s, I was working with an older woman who was experiencing what she called ghost children. She drew pictures of what they looked like. Years after she passed away, I revisited her former home to speak to the new owners to see if they had experienced any ghost children. The new owners had not seen any, but their real children had been drawing pictures of the woman who had been my client. Did you get that?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So is she drawing... Or wait, she drew pictures of what they looked like. He doesn't state here whether the pictures that she drew looked like the real children of the new owners, because that's the missing piece here. If they do, then that's bizarre. Actually, I don't know. If they were just kind of really sketchy outlines, maybe she didn't. Maybe they were blurry, whatever. But is she drawing? That's kind of bizarre. It's almost like inverted reality where they see her while she's dead. She sees them while she's dead, but it's like happening while she's still alive. Or are these kind of like rifts in dimensions, tears in the space-time continuum, where her consciousness is as if it's a ghost after she's dead, and it's kind of going in and out, so she sees the children. We discussed this on our Shadow People podcast. Like, what if we're the Shadow People in other beings' realities, and we're just going about our business, and we appear as shadow people to other entities in other dimensions?
Yeah, that was an interesting theory.
Yeah, that's super creepy. So what do you got? Was it some kind of weird time travel, interdimensional peaks? Like, what do you think of that account?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. They started drawing her dead client or some shit.
His client, yeah, who had died. The new owner's children. I guess he was expecting them to possibly have seen ghost children as well, but yeah, it's weird. Smoke and apparitions. The number of spirits and creatures that Tenny has seen throughout the years is truly astonishing. Despite all his experience, though, he is still no closer to being able to explain any of it. Over the last 3 decades, I've seen a lot that I still don't comprehend, he admits. Full-bodied apparitions wandering down the halls of hospitals. Ghostly cats vanishing through walls, and smoke-like patches of darkness writhing through hallways. After a while, it all seems normal. Do you think if you were a ghost hunter and you saw all of these things, like it wouldn't surprise you anymore? It would just be a regular day at the office.
I don't know. I probably wouldn't never get used to that.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, let's say you're a ghost hunter who's seen all of these bizarre paranormal things, and then you'd probably have, after so many years or decades, you would probably think people that think it's all fake are kind of weird, because if it's completely true reality to you and you see it almost every day and all these other people think it's all fake, that must be a weird perspective, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you know it's true, you directly experienced it countless times, and then a certain percentage of the population, the masses, the mainstream, they're just calling you stupid, but you see it every day.
Yeah, that is kind of weird.
The fear of reality. After all the strange encounters Tenney has had, the worst he experienced is something every one of us does at one point or another. For me, the scariest thing that can happen to anyone is the psychological confrontation a person can have with their own mortality while sitting alone quietly in a dark room. No one really knows how reality works. Everyone has their own opinion based on whatever facts or belief system they may have. But no one knows exactly what happens after we die. Confronting that as yet unknowable fact is both terrifying and exhilarating. I think you shared your opinion of what happens when you die in a previous podcast, Maxwell. You think everything ceases and your consciousness is just done? Or has your opinion changed after doing all these paranormal podcasts?
I think it stays the same.
So you think when you die, it's just all over?
Yeah, it's just all over. It's just like into nothingness.
So you don't subscribe to the laws of thermodynamics or the laws of physics? Energy cannot be created or destroyed. So the energy that you possess, it can't just... How can it be destroyed? It can only be transferred to different state. So if you believe in different dimensions, your energy, some people believe that the soul is immortal, and whether you believe in incarnation, reincarnation, or ascension in spiritual planes, or just other dimensions, where if your soul energy exists in infinite dimensions or in multiple finite dimensions, it can cease to exist in the physical, in this physical reality, but it continues in another reality or another dimension, a higher dimension, if you will. Here's a logical question, though. Do you think you have enough information of all the secrets of the universe, all of the infinite undiscovered laws of physics, to make the determination that everything just stops?
Well, I think I don't think I'll be experiencing the same experience as I'm having now. You know, words, sights, sounds. Like, I don't think I'll be, and then when I do leave, I don't think I'll be aware that I've just left or something, and I'm experiencing, I don't know. I think it'll just be different.
That's pretty interesting. Do you remember we mentioned some reincarnation cases on previous podcasts, like what happens after you die? Do you remember that one where people can remember their past lives? So they possess a completely brand new body and brain, but somehow, either through reincarnated soul, their soul somehow has memory that's separate from their physical brain, but their physical brain can access the soul memory. In that case, you might, if you're reincarnated or not reincarnated, if your energy goes to another plane of existence, it might have memory. Do we have enough information to know whether it has memory or not? I don't know. I'm just asking questions because this is the Mind Shocked podcast.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
What's in the box? One evening last year, as my wife and I were driving home, we received an email from a frightened man in Indiana who had an effigy he needed disposed. Recalls Newkirk, who runs the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and Occult. It was only an hour or so out of their way, so they agreed to meet in a high school parking lot where the man worked as a janitor. As Newkirk and his wife were waiting, a massive silhouette emerged from the darkness, holding a cardboard box, he recalls. I cautiously got out to greet the man. Then, as he handed me the box, the street lamp above us blew. He just started laughing and informed me it's because, quote, he knows you're here to take him and he doesn't like it, end quote. The man led them into the empty school. Without exaggeration, nearly every light we walked under while holding the cardboard box flickered. He unlocked the door to a classroom and sat down behind a teacher's desk, where he proceeded to unfold the flaps of the box and remove an absolutely chilling handmade doll with a twisted face and gaping mouth. The janitor began to mutter things about hurting people, and his fists balled up and he started breathing heavily, Newkirk says. As his huge imposing figure started to rise out of the chair, I quickly grabbed the doll, wrapped it up in a towel, and threw it back in the box. The janitor sat back down and started to cry. It was clear to Newkirk that something much bigger and much more devilish was behind everything that had been happening. While it was their job to take the effigy into their care, the janitor had his reservations. I'm honestly scared for you two about this thing, the janitor stammered. Lock it up. After you do your investigation, lock it up. Newkirk genuinely believes that this poor man was enduring some kind of evil possession or oppression. Spirit, demon, he doesn't know, but the case is still open and active. What do you think about that? We haven't really discussed cursed dolls or demonically possessed dolls or items. What do you think about all that?
I don't know. I'm thinking of Chucky.
Was that a good movie, according to you?
I've never seen it. I only see that.
Oh, wow. You haven't seen Chucky? What the heck is wrong with you, Max? Well, for someone who likes movies, you really haven't seen that many movies.
I don't know. That fucking little doll scares the shit out of me.
It's actually more of a horror comedy. It's not really, yeah, I don't know. It always struck me as more of an obvious horror comedy. I haven't watched Annabelle.
Is that how Sour Patch Kids, you know what I'm talking about? Is that how they started those dolls? You know those dolls back in the day, like weird-looking dolls? Did it start from Chucky?
No, I don't know, actually. Chucky was fairly recent. That was an 80s movie. So those dolls are from the 80s?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, yeah, it was more of a horror comedy. I've watched most of the Chucky movies. I kind of dropped off after the last couple of sequels because they were getting really, really low-budget and crappy. But yeah, the first couple movies were quite entertaining horror comedy. They just didn't have the same creep vibe as other movies do. So yeah, I haven't seen Annabelle though. Have you seen that one?
What's that about?
A haunted doll, quite famous.
Oh, it's recent, right?
Yeah, a couple years.
Yeah, I'm trying to stay away from horror films.
Why, you get scared too easily?
Yeah, I don't like. Yeah, I don't know. As I get older, it gets all messed up.
Isn't it usually the other way around for most people? It's like they were scared easier when they were younger. As they get older, they get more jaded. It's, oh, it's just a movie. It's not quite the same experience. I don't really get scared as easily as I did, obviously, when I was younger. The creep vibe, I mean, now it's more of psychological horror is creepier. Just the idea of certain things instead of the usual jump scares. But
yeah, not the jump scares, but like imagining ghosts and things moving around and shit. I don't like that.
So what do you think about this case with the doll in the box? You think things can be possessed or haunted objects?
Probably not as likely as human beings. And
so you think this was all made up?
I don't know. Some some robotic student probably like playing with someone.
And it just drove the janitor crazy. So why is the janitor sitting down and crying about it? We're not talking about the doll moving.
I don't know. He's a crying little bitch.
All right. Maybe you would be too if you had a haunted doll. What do you think? That was messing with your mind.
Yeah, that's fucked up. I don't want to see that shit.
All right, the darkness of the mind. After all that, Newkirk has seen and continues to see while he investigates the paranormal. It's not the figures or the spirits that appear that are the scariest, but the human mind. Dealing with the unknown is scary no matter what, he says. If you want to know the scariest thing can happen to you on a paranormal investigation, it's witnessing truly unexplained phenomena and having your worldview completely thrown out the window. When you've seen what's actually making that scratching noise behind the wall, you can't ever unsee it. Does that unsettle you, Maxwell?
Well, wait, are you saying he saw the things that were scratching behind the wall?
I mean, that might have been more of a analogy or a metaphor, but for ghosts that he has seen that made weird noises and he can't unsee them. But I suppose it could have been literal in certain cases, yeah. Is that creepy enough for you, Maxwell? All right, let's move on to a very interesting article entitled When Ghosts Attack. This was posted Halloween 2008 on CNN, of all places. I thought it was rather interesting, by John Blake. Strange things seem to happen when Grant Wilson enters a room. Human forms materialize in darkened hallways. The dead whisper greetings from beyond the grave. Unseen entities attack and hurl terrified people to the ground. Every day is Halloween for Wilson, co-star of the Sci-Fi Channel's hit show, Ghost Hunters. Close encounters of the paranormal kind would drive most people to look for another hobby, but Wilson says he ain't afraid of no ghosts. That's part of the job, says Wilson, who investigates suspected hauntings with his co-host, Jason Hawes. We tell everyone that we train that you'll be punched, slapped, and grabbed. Be prepared for it. If these guys told you that while you were preparing to go to a ghost hunt with them, what would you say? Would you laugh it off, or what would you do?
If they what?
If these guys told you that you'd be punched, slapped, and grabbed on the ghost hunt, what would you think of
I wouldn't attend.
that? You wouldn't think that they were just making it up to creep you out for the ghost hunt? I guess I would probably be skeptical. I would be like, oh yeah, they're just saying that to freak you out.
I would be skeptical, but I still wouldn't go.
Why not? If ghosts aren't real.
I don't know, they might fuck with me and shit. They might have like people, a team to fuck with you and shit.
Anyone who has watched their 401k account evaporate during the recent stock market dive knows something about horror. But Wilson is part of a growing community that prefers getting their chills the old-fashioned way. They are ghost hunters, or as they prefer to be called, paranormal investigators. Ghost Hunters, which airs a special live show at 7 p.m. Halloween night, is helping lift the stigma once attached to paranormal investigators. The show has become so popular that the group featured in each episode, the Atlantic Paranormal Society, has spawned imitators across the United States and affiliates in 12 countries. TAPS, as the Ghost Hunters group is informally known, even has its own Beyond Reality radio show, magazine, lecture tours, t-shirts, and groupies. Are you a Ghost Hunters groupie, Maxwell?
Not that I remember now.
So you might have been, but then you forgot. Maxwell Army. Ghost Hunters has made creepy cool, says David Schrader, a paranormal investigator and co-host of Darkness Radio, a radio show that investigates paranormal activity. 5 or 6 years ago, you'd be embarrassed to sit around the water cooler talking about ghosts. But now everybody talks about it. It's gone mainstream, Schrader says. It's also gone Hollywood. Paranormal shows like Paranormal State on A&E, Haunting Evidence on True TV, Dead Famous on the Biography Channel, and A Haunting on the Discovery Channel are trying to mimic the success. of ghost hunters. Would you agree with that, Maxwell? Would you say prior to around 2008-ish, around those years, that ghost hunting was more taboo and less mainstream, like in the early 2000s or the mid to late 90s?
Yeah, I remember it was like more taboo back in the day. When Medium came out, that show, and a lot of paranormal shows. I think that was the only one I remember. Medium. That was I don't know. It's become more mainstream after that. Not that the show was responsible for making it mainstream, but I think the show followed the mainstreamness of ghost hunting and stuff.
You know what I noticed, and this is completely anecdotal and subject to my own personal experience as when I was in high school many years ago, there were it seemed like the younger crowd up through probably the early years of college, they were kind of into paranormal stuff was always cool. And then as you got into the upper years in college, it kind of faded off, and then any kind of adult that was into the paranormal or ghost hunting was kind of viewed as weird or gullible or dumb. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I guess so, because a lot of people get more educated and they go through the scientific methodologies, things like that, research, and they start to doubt their beliefs and experiences and
Yeah,
stories.
I'm not sure it even has anything to do with that. I think it's more of just stigma, where like adults, even the ones that never studied scientific method, the ones that never are intellectuals in college or even went to college, like once you get a job, you go through life a couple years, it's more of a stigma. Oh, you're an adult that ghost hunts. It's kind of like, whereas what if you're like in high school or early college years and you're going to hang out in the cemetery to try to like get creeped out by ghosts or using a Ouija board, at a party or something. It's kind of like half the people believe, half the people don't believe. It's like creepy, scary, fun, cool. And then once you get up there in age, it's just kind of the stigma. It's silly for adults to be into that. That's what I found. Whereas, yeah, post once it got up, all these ghost hunting shows started coming out, it seems like more adults got into it.
Yeah, I can agree with that analysis.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. I could draw a parallel to pro wrestling. You ever watch pro wrestling, Maxwell?
Yeah, a long time ago when I was a
It's
kid.
almost like the opposite thing happened in pro wrestling, whereas when people thought it was real or real-ish, and then after a certain, I mean, I don't have a date, I guess probably the mid-90s, even late-90s, pro wrestling was kind of big, and adults at a certain point prior to that, it was kind of okay for adults to be into pro wrestling. And then after a certain point, it was kind of like, oh, well, what kind of adults watch pro wrestling? Other than with their kids. But it's interesting to see how pop culture and mainstream views change, evolve, or devolve. But anyway, back to this article. Paranormal investigators aren't just chasing ghosts anymore, they're chasing television gigs, Schrader says. Everybody I know has a pilot in development, including me, Schrader says. They throw it around like frisbees. It's become a joke. The paranormal shows have also created a paranormal circuit. Families and friends attend ghost hunting conventions, retreats. One was dubbed Ghost Stock. Man, we should have went to that. Swap tips on ghost hunting gear and make pilgrimages to famous haunted places like the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, the setting for the Stephen King movie The Shining. I've never been to the Stanley Hotel. Do you think we should go out to the Stanley Hotel one day, Maxwell? Do a live broadcast?
Let's do it.
All right, we got to set that up. Why they chase ghosts. Many of these amateur paranormal investigators are inspired and freaked out by what they see on Ghost Hunters. Some of the incidents recorded by ghost hunters are mystifying. Ghostly forms appear on camera. Chairs lurch across rooms by themselves. And voices of people long dead are played back to their wide-eyed relatives. In one of the most famous Ghost Hunters episodes, a cameraman is grabbed and hurled to the ground, though no one appears to touch him. The cameraman is so shaken that he sobs and quits the show. Wilson says people who think they have a ghost at home should not try a do-it-yourself home ghost repair. A person who uses Ouija boards or anything else to contact ghosts can unleash malevolent spirits. Have you ever done that, Max? Have you ever played with a Ouija board?
No, I don't know how to use it.
Yeah, I never did. I was never into that, too. It was, you know what's weird? As a kid, I never believed in any of that. But there was this just feeling in the back of your mind. It was just like, don't mess with it. Even though I didn't believe, it was kind of weird. It's like I didn't want to. It was weird. I guess I wasn't 100% in my conviction. Because if I was 100% in my conviction that there's no such thing as ghosts, then it wouldn't matter to play with the Ouija board. I guess there was some doubt in my mind. I don't know. Would you have played with one? Without, you never played with one in any of your school years? It was kind of a popular thing to do. I mean, I didn't either, but I mean, most of my friends had at one point.
Nah, I don't know. I'd probably just watch other people play with it. And I'll be like, I'll have my hand on a doorknob ready to go.
That's funny. You might not be ready for what happens, Wilson says. Some ghost hunters say they entered the field because, like Wilson, they had personal experiences with the supernatural. Others want to know if there is something beyond death. Others, like Marley Gibson, an author and paranormal investigator, says they're more scared by current events. We're living in a world where we're fighting two wars. We've got poverty, homelessness, people not having health care and a job. People want escapism, says Gibson, author of Ghost Huntress, The Awakening, a forthcoming book that follows the exploits of a 16-year-old girl who forms a paranormal research team. Ask ghost hunters if they get scared, and many give the same reply. I don't do scared, just startled. Gibson says many ghost hunters go into investigations armed with strong spiritual beliefs. I've never met such spiritually grounded, religious, God-fearing people as I have in the paranormal community, she says. I felt a very large finger or a paw poke me in the back. Sometimes paranormal investigators, though, admit they experience what Schrader, the Darkness Radio co-host, calls oh bleep moments. Schrader had one last December when he apparently took his job home with him one evening. He visited his ex-wife and children after coming back from a ghost hunting retreat and decided to spend the night in the basement. Around 3 a.m, he says, he heard his then one-year-old daughter screaming. He ran upstairs to hear her say that a shadow was watching her in her room. He comforted his daughter and returned to sleep downstairs. His wife then called him an hour later on his cell phone from her bedroom and whispered, "Get up in my room. There is something here, and I can see it." Nothing was there, but Schrader says some spirits had apparently thought it was okay to pay a visit to his family. He says people who are open to the existence of ghosts sometimes become beacons that attract spirits. You know, that's a pretty good point. We've discussed this many times. We've discussed heroin addicts or drug addicts being more susceptible to paranormal activity, demonic entities, ghosts, whatnot, due to their state. It's kind of, I mean, is it similar to the reticular activating system in your brain where if you don't know something exists, you won't see it? I mean, we use this example many times. Like if you buy a certain type of car and then you're driving out in the road and you see them everywhere, whereas before you bought it, you had never seen them. And the frequency is almost like alarming. And that's due to your reticular activating system.
So you're saying like these ghost experiences are like the RAC, RAS?
Not necessarily, but someone who doesn't believe in ghosts, it's almost like their brain is less susceptible to those frequencies or that band in the light spectrum that where they would see these entities. Whereas someone else who, let's say, knows they, it's almost like your belief dictates your reality, right?
Yes, of course. I believe a lot of these encounters have been affected by RAS phenomena. Not phenomena, but psychological nature of humans.
Well, yeah, there's also the theory that, let's say, a demon just popped up. So this isn't actually a theory. This is proven scientifically. Your brain only interprets a certain amount of information that's in front of you. So semi-related to RAS, but not directly, because your eyes can only process however much information per second. So if you're looking at something, supposedly the brain will simply not interpret something that's too extreme to your reality, almost like it's protecting itself from you going crazy. So it's almost like there's a self-preservation. So if there's a whole bunch of demons just hanging out with you, they have their arm around you and you guys are just chilling, and your brain almost will delete that information to keep you sane and keep you surviving. Even if it really is there, your eyes simply won't see it, even if it's there. Or they'll see it, but the brain won't interpret that information.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, crazy, crazy stuff. Schrader decided to solve the problem by calling for a supernatural version of pest control. He blessed the house with holy water and called in two demonologists to cleanse the house. No more ghosts. So do you think that's just a coincidence? That when houses are blessed or they use holy water or sage or some of these old-time remedies to get rid of evil spirits, isn't it bizarre how sometimes it works? Is that just all a coincidence?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, like, I'm thinking more of the energy that they put into the ceremony.
That's pretty interesting.
That produces the results rather than the actual water or whatever they use.
So it's almost like the energy related to their belief. So it's like a weird placebo that penetrates the universe?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's very, very interesting, Maxwell. Very interesting theory. Patrick Burns, a paranormal investigator and co-host of Haunting Evidence, had one of his teeth-chattering moments when there was no one around to call. He says he was working on a documentary on ghosts from his home computer one night when he felt something touch him. I felt a very pronounced poke with a very large finger or possibly a paw just above my belt line on the back, he says. Now, the average person might have taken that as a cue to run from the room. But Burns is a professional, and besides, he has his own paranormal television show. He shrugged and kept working. Would that have been you, Maxwell?
What's that?
What do you mean?
Would I kept on working?
Yeah, he's sitting at his computer working on his paranormal documentary when something touched him, a finger or a paw, above his belt line on his back. Would that freak you out?
That's messed up. I jumped up on the computer.
You know what's bizarre? Have you ever had, like, not necessarily itches, but strange sensations similar to an itch that just happened randomly?
No.
Really?
Oh, I see what you mean. Like just random, like super itch, and then you have to scratch it.
Not necessarily itch, almost like just a sensation. Like, not necessarily like something is touching you, but almost like an itch that's not itchy. Like it's just a sensation. Like you don't necessarily have to itch it. But it's not like a feeling of pressure, like a touch. It's just a sensation.
Yeah, I see what you mean, but I don't think so.
Yeah, that's weird. Are those just ghosts messing with you? I don't know. I think I've had quite a few. I mean, I think most people have them. I don't know. So he keeps working on his computer. Then he says he felt the room temperature drop. Cold spots are often associated with hauntings, but Burns kept working because, as he said later, no way is my house haunted. Finally, he heard a thud that sounded like a body slammed against the wall. The impact is so hard that it shook the house, he says. I throw off my headphones and say, okay, you have my attention now, Burns says. After that, nothing else happened. It just wanted me to acknowledge that it was there. That's kind of weird. What do you make of that?
They just wanted to acknowledge that I was there. I don't know.
The ghosts are just attention whores?
It's possible.
Sometimes encounters with the living can be just as strange as encounters with the paranormal, ghost hunters say. Wilson, the Ghost Hunters co-host, says he's more leery of people than ghosts. Paranormal investigators like him and Burns are now so famous they have adoring fans. Wilson is a Roto-Rooter plumber by day, but he had to stop answering residential calls because too many people were breaking their toilets just to meet him. And Hawes, his ghost hunting plumbing partner. Though Wilson says he's never been scared by a ghost, he still sounds shaken by one encounter. He says he once met an entity that displayed a personal interest in him. She appeared in front of him, displaying a tattoo of his face stenciled on her leg, and asked him what he thought. That entity was a fan Wilson met during a public appearance. What do you think, Maxwell?
That's kind of messed up. So, like, that fan died?
No. I think this is kind of a joke. It's kind of a joke. Like, he was never scared by a ghost, but he's shaken by encountering a human who had a tattoo of his face stenciled on her leg. He thought that was creepy, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, so that had nothing to do with ghosts. He just comparing it to
a fan just walked up to him and showed him a tattoo of his face on her leg.
Yeah, it's kind of messed up.
Would you want girls to have tattoos of your face on their legs?
I'd be flattered.
Would that creep you out or no?
I'm good.
That's funny. All right, we have saved the best for last. I know how much Maxwell loves videos. So, and photographs. So we'll be getting into photographic and videographic evidence. These last two encounters by ghost hunters have actual documented evidence. Are you ready for this, Maxwell?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, first, the background. This is actually from Inside Edition. These ghost hunters claim spirits posed for a photo with them. This was posted October 25th, 2018. How conveniently. Right before Halloween. Ghost hunters have the difficult job of capturing evidence of their encounters with the supernatural. And sometimes that means putting themselves in harm's way. While exploring Revesby Abbey in Lincolnshire, England, paranormal investigators Craig Jones and Matt Wood posed at a spot with what they call static spiritual energy, inviting any spirits in for a photograph. The results were spooky. What we can say for definite, that there was an energy buildup around us when we asked for them to have a photo taken with us, Jones told Cater's news agency. He added, later, when we looked at the photos, in every one that was being taken at the time, we could see it moving around us. Okay, so check this out, Maxwell. So what's interesting about these photographs is it's not just one anomaly, like a flash, a bouncing light, because in a lot of the ghost photographs that are orbs or whatnot, I mean, here's multiple photographs of this thing floating around them. Coincidentally, they said it happened right after they asked for ghosts to pose with them in the photograph. So it's not...
I'm watching it now. There's two dudes on the stairs.
Yeah, but you see how in the different photographs where this ghost mist or whatever, it's moving around them. It's not in one spot. There were multiple pictures. I guess they didn't take a video. That would be interesting to see a video of that. But
oh, these are photos? Like multiple photos?
Yeah, so they just took a bunch of pictures, and the orbs are... you see how the orbs or this whatever thing... Is it just a smudge? Because a lot of times people think it's just a smudge, it's a refraction, but there seem to be multiple photos, and this thing is moving around them. So either they faked all of them, or what could that be?
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
What do you think? Is this a legit ghost phenomena?
It looks pretty good. I mean, it's not, I don't know, have they looked into manipulation?
I mean, this is the only information available. So these guys invited a ghost to take photos with them. And this entity, or this something, a smudge, but there's multiple photographs and multiple smudges. So unless they faked them, this is a step beyond the classic orb or simply bouncing light overexposure, because normally when you only have one photograph or even a series of photographs, it only shows up in one of the photographs, or it's in the same spot in all of them, which could be like a smudge on the lens. It could be some dust refracting light. But when it's that big of a size and it's moving all around them, the same as they experienced or they said they experienced in person, that makes it a little bit more legit in my book. What do you think?
Wait, they actually said they experienced some kind of feeling or they saw it at the same time as the photographs?
This is what they said. What we can say for definite is that there was an energy buildup around us when we asked for them to have a photo taken with us. So they kind of felt it around them. And then when they looked at the photographs, it's moving around them. It's not just in one spot.
I see.
So that leads it more credibility than most, I would say, unless they just faked it. It's a smudge. They smudged the photographs on purpose. But at least they went through the trouble of smudging it in different spots.
Yeah, make it look better.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our last one, which is the most extreme. Tony Ferguson is an avid ghost hunter. I'm assuming this is not the UFC fighter. Is an avid ghost hunter who said he was attacked at a cave in the Brecon Beacons, South Wales. People have told me about having paranormal experiences in the cave, but nobody had taken any video or pictures, so I decided to explore, he told Caters. Immediately upon entering the cave, he sensed a presence, he said. Then I saw this mist come at me. It went straight through my body and left me feeling really winded, he said. I felt like I was going to pass out. As soon as it happened, my first thought was, I need to get the hell out of here. It was too much. So take a look at the video in the cave. So it's a weird fog type mist. It's not too pronounced. It's relatively light. And it just kind of, and then you could see it again. It's pretty weird. What do you think? It's captured twice. It's captured down at a slight distance and then also going through him. It comes right at the camera as if it went straight through him. And then he got the hell out of there.
That's weird.
What do you think? I mean, it's
he almost passed out. That's weird.
He said it left me really winded.
Yeah, that's weird.
I felt like I was going to pass out. As soon as it happened, my first thought was, I need to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
What do you think? Does that look like a legitimate video to you? There's a lot of ghost accounts of mists that ghosts kind of manifest as mists. Or fog type manifestation.
Yeah, I think they made a few movies based on mists and stuff.
You think this one was legit?
It looks pretty good. I mean, like it didn't. It looked like the mist conformed to the objects around it, so it's kind of cool. But even then, like you could have had a mist machine or some shit.
I don't see that. I don't think it could be a mist machine. I think it was either. I think it had to have been faked. Either it's real or it had to have been faked in post. And they had to have edited it because they could just superimpose on top of it. And then he could just make up the story about what he felt unless it was real. Because I don't see how a mist machine can just operate, can just manifest like that out of nowhere. It's almost like a little tuft moving on its own. How could a mist machine do that? It would leave a trail. It just doesn't seem like it could have been... practically.
Yeah, because most CGIs can do that good of a job, so.
Yeah, it could be CG, but I don't see it as being practical. I don't think they faked it on location. It's either real or they faked it in editing. So that's all I got on that. Hopefully, our listeners were thoroughly mind-shocked with these creepy and spooky encounters from actual ghost hunters and paranormal experts. If you like the podcast, you can donate to our PayPal. Just check the link in the description. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. If you like the podcast, hit the like button. Feel free to share it across social media platforms. Like our Facebook page. You can also check us out. Twitter, Reddit, Patreon. And if you become a patron, you actually get to choose topics for the podcast. And depending on which tier you go on, you could actually join us on the podcast. This is Bruce McGuire signing off.
And Maxwell Powers.
Have a good night.